Welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I'm your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
And our baby, Alex Fasella.
Hi.
And today we are doing the Elton John Tim Rice musicale, Aida.
Aida.
But first, Aida. How's Baby Met World?
A little bit. So we're almost done with the first act of our musical, and I had nothing to do, so I thought, why don't I write out a treatment of the whole plot of the movie and the first act that we had written, but then just the rest of the movie, so we can see what changes we would need to make or what questions we would need to answer that the movie doesn't quite address well. And I'm starting to notice there are, I think, some things that we added to get across the themes that we're trying to add into it that may be fat on the story, but I'm trying not to be too like in my head about it because it's a first draft and we're only halfway done. But like, I'm assuming there'll be like an hour of music, like a standard kind of cast album, and then The Patriot's already a really long movie, so we were trying to crunch some stuff, but it's like we accidentally made it even longer.
Oh no.
Yeah, but again, like I said to Miles, I was like, this is something we should talk about when we get to the end and start doing, you know, recording reads and then fixing. And we kind of had a conversation where, and I think this is one of the reasons why we've been working well together. He was like, Alex, when I write, I can be too verbose and want to cram a million things in. And when you write, your instinct is to pare down like two pages into three words.
Yeah.
Which apart from each other could not work. But when they're together, they're kind of part of like a necessary conversation that really works. Because we were doing the scene that is kind of like backstory on the villain that's in the movie. And it's a great scene in the movie. So I was like, hey, I added a little bit to just, you know, make the tone even with what we were doing. But on the whole, it was pretty strong. And the way the characters were talking was a little bit wordy for my taste. But I started to think, I was like, you know, we've had enough scenes where I want to go in and say, this can go, this can go, this can go. And he goes, no, I think I like it for how it's, this is how actual people talk, Alex. They don't all talk in sound bites. And so I thought, okay, as I was writing the scene, I was like, I'm going to leave what the movie dialogue is for now and run it all by Miles. And if we end up agreeing to cut some stuff, we'll do it. But he was like, no, I really like all this stuff. And plus it kind of works for how you wrote the characters musically later, that like the British people are a little more verbose in the lyrics, so why would they not be in the scenes? And so I'm not super worried about like, oh, I think we accidentally added some stuff that needs trimming, because I think we've been handling this adaptation for two people who've never written a musical ever. I think we're kind of handling it pretty good, so I'm not crazy worried about it.
Awesome.
Yeah. And other than that, I watched the 1993 live capture of Sam Mendes's production of Cabaret.
Oh,
it was so good. I think, speaking of which, I think it was a little bit trimmed because it felt a little shorter than the other bootlegs I've watched, but it was so good.
I'm not sure, probably.
Yeah.
I actually have never watched that.
It's on YouTube fully. It's real good.
Oh, I saw the remount of that production with, what's her name?
Emma Stone?
Michelle Williams.
Michelle Williams. Well, Emma Stone took over.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Her accent was weird.
Yeah, but
but sometimes your accents are weird.
Can we agree that there may be no character in all of musical theater that would be less cool about COVID restrictions than Sally Bowles?
Yeah.
Oh, I just get that vibe from her that she wouldn't be cool about like 6 feet and masks and stuff. I feel like she'd be like, ah.
Well, in a specific brand of no one wants to be left alone with their thoughts less than Sally Bowles.
Yes.
Like, I think she's the type of character that was like, the concept of quarantine does not sit well with her.
No.
Any stretch.
No. To be alone?
Oh, yeah.
No. Or a nightmare. No.
She's like, she may be one of the most like extroverted musical theater characters. It's just like a, hey, I get my energy from other people. Hello.
Yeah. And like, there's a brutalness about that too. Cause it's like, you can tell that she's constantly on the verge of like, if you don't enable my delusions, I'm going to snap. Like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I saw a video essay about Cabaret once that was like, she is in many ways the first manic pixie dream girl and a deconstruction of the trope at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's like it is both setting the tone and before its time at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I forget her name, but the Sally Bowles in this production did something I've never really seen a Sally Bowles fully commit to doing, which is when she's doing the final song, Cabaret. I mean, not the final song, but her final song, Cabaret. She, by the end, is just screaming it, not blinking, like punk rock style. And it really worked because that character is now snapped.
Yeah.
And my personal headcanon is that Sally Bowles at least helped to write that song because it seems so specific. But
yeah.
It doesn't have to be, but I like to imagine that it is, and that was a person she knew. But, you know, every other Sally Bowles I've seen still kind of, and especially like Liza Minnelli, and one of the problems of her being cast in that part is she's too cool about it, and Sally Bowles has to be kind of like, you know, not have that much star power to be like, oh, she'll be fine. She'll work somewhere. She has to be like completely shattering it at every moment almost. And then finally, so having this woman just going, I'm going like Elsie. I was like, whoa. And it really worked for me.
It was Jane Horrocks.
Yes.
Who is a British actress.
She was great.
She was in an episode of Flack, which is a show I just binged.
Yeah, you sure did.
Yeah, I liked it.
Have we met World? We watched
Come From Away.
We watched Come From Away.
Ooh, I watched a little bit of it. It looked really good.
It was
wonderful.
It was an excellent taping of that production.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, this is the show. And we've said this many times about Come From Away. It's one of those things where it was like, it felt like Methadone musical in that, like, I was like, yeah, it's cool, but I really wish I was in that room.
Yeah.
Like, it scratches the itch to a degree, but I was like, I'm sad that I'm not there watching it. Like, it's in its perfect medium in that regard. And that, like, I was like, this can really only exist as a live theater production.
Yeah.
It's
like hearing a really great live band on tape. Like, oh, it's awesome, but you're not getting the full effect.
Not at all.
Yeah.
But no, we had a great time. It was a good production.
Yeah. I think it's a testament to the fact that producers should feel a little more empowered to put these out into the world because it makes me want to see the show more. It does not be like, well, I saw this already, so I'm not going to go to Broadway.
100%. We got done with it and I was just like, I just want to go see it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Live Waitress, please.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, I fully understand like their concern of being like, we're not going to take, like, why would we put this out and then we're not going to sell tickets? Like, that's a reasonable assumption. But I don't think that it's actually the case.
No, I think it will just broaden the audience of Broadway as a whole. Like, I think people will watch that never would have made their trip to New York.
Hamilton being live on Disney Plus has not slowed Hamilton sales.
No.
No, and because it's just not the same.
If there's any fandom that prides itself on wearing out a product and then going to see it live, it is Broadway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's just the new version of wearing out a cast record. Like,
100%. And it's like, a lot of the people that I've heard people make the argument, like, why would I go see it? I already saw it on Disney Plus. I'm like, I feel like the majority of the people making that argument were never going to go in the first place.
Probably.
So,
If
anything, it just gets the brand out there more.
Yeah. I will say with live caps, like, I probably won't watch the live capture again.
Yeah.
Because it's the same. But you can go see a show many times, mm-hmm. and it's never the same.
Although you gotta see if we're coming from away. A lot of Ithaca College up there. Q's up there.
A lot of Ithaca College.
Caesar's up there. Emily, who I didn't realize was in that show, but she didn't graduate from Ithaca, but she was she was there for a couple years. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. Go Bombers.
They did a good job.
They did a good job.
Want a word of the week?
Word of the week.
The word of the week.
Bombers.
Is bomber. is Grammy Award for Best Musical Theater Recording.
Okay.
And I'm going to have you start. Oh, sorry. It's technically Grammy Award for Best Musical Theater Album.
Yes.
I want you
they're
to
not
guess.
Soundtracks, they are albums.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. I would like you to guess the first winner of this award.
Oklahoma.
1959.
West Side
Story. I was gonna say West Side Story.
No.
Funny Girl?
No.
Hello Dolly.
No.
Gypsy?
Gypsy's a good guess.
Gypsy's a great guess. It is incorrect.
Is it now? Can I ask for a hint?
Yeah.
Is it a show should we know this?
Yeah.
Have we covered it?
Recently.
Evita? No.
Recently?
No, 59.
No, 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 59. No, no, no. A Music Man?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Literally last week. Music Man. The first nominees were Flower Drum Song, the music from Peter Gunn, Sound of Jazz, Seven Lively Arts, and Victory at Sea Volume 2.
What's Victory at Sea Volume 2?
I don't know. Let's click on it. It's a documentary television series.
Oh, okay.
What made that a musical theater album?
I don't know.
Excerpts from the music soundtrack by Richard Rodgers.
Oh, South Pacific.
Were re-recorded for record albums.
Okay.
I see. Hmm. Interesting.
Okay.
The next year, Gypsy won.
Okay.
But it tied with Redhead.
How can one tie for an award that's kind of made up in the first place?
I don't know.
I guess it's votes, but like still.
But still. I like looking at musicals that win the Grammy Award versus win the Tony, because it's obviously not always the same.
Yeah.
I will also say in recent years, like Hamilton has kind of changed the game of the cast album, because in years past, you would do all of your previews, open a show, and then on Monday, you would open your show on Sunday, and then the Monday, when the show is dark, you spend the entire day recording the album, and then you do the show again on Tuesday.
Golly.
You just do it all at once, all in one big room. And Hamilton was the first, I think, like big ticket musical to spend like a month making the album like an album and not like a musical theater album.
Produced by Questlove.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so obviously they won a Grammy.
Yeah.
Well, because the show is such a, as much as it's an homage to a lot of musical theater, like it's also an homage to hip hop. It's an homage to
albums.
Yeah. Like that, like music production is like a huge part of that. So I think it actually, that like actually like really tracks. And they also, they had the benefit of knowing what they had in front of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there are certain, it goes back to the old Steve Martin quote, like how to succeed in show business is just be undeniably good. Just be, if you are undeniably good, you will be successful. Like, yeah. and like Hamilton is that, like, you see that it's like, yeah, that there, no one can say this is bad. It's like Hamilton is the Justin Timberlake of musicals. It's just like, no, like you want to say you don't like it, but you do. It's like
I know someone who said it was boring, and I was like, that's patently false. You could say you don't like it, but how is this boring? It's an insane story.
Yeah.
With like, stuff cut like, out of it that was more insane. Like,
yeah.
His dad probably wasn't his actual dad. Like, they just don't even mention that.
Yeah, when people come out of the woodwork like with a lot of criticisms for Hamilton, a lot of times I'm like, what are you working through over there? Because it's clearly, this isn't about the show, really. Like, there's clearly something happening. Like, you know, it's not perfect, but it's, you know. But I think them taking the month when they had, like, they were like, look, we're not open on Broadway yet. Let's just get this album out. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, like, it's a 3-hour show. I can only imagine if that album was rushed, musical theater history could be a bit different, because I can imagine it not hitting as well.
Well, the album.
That's true. Yeah.
The album is a large part of the reason that show's success. I mean, like, the amount of, like, that was, like, number one streaming for like months when that came out.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's sung through and the entire album is basically there, I think can only help that. Like we were talking about before, because now it's like, well, now I want to see all this acted out because I know all the story and I'm fascinated by it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. You know what I'm fascinated by?
What's up?
The Grammy Award winner in 1997. Do you want to take a guess?
97. Lion King?
No, that was 98 or 99, but it did win.
Okay.
Aladdin?
97.
97 was actually a very good year for music, too.
It beat Rent.
It beat Rent?
Yes. It beat Rent, Bring Into Noise, Bring Into Funk.
Rent, which won the Pulitzer that year. It won the Pulitzer, but it didn't win the Grammy for best.
Yep. It also beat Victor Victoria, and A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Look, I honestly have no idea.
Riverdance.
Huh.
Correct.
Riverdance?
Beat Rent for best album.
Huh.
Okay. Well, here's the thing.
Well, at least we could have never gotten that one.
From the Grammys, you got to remember, it's like it's just simply about the music production. You know what I mean? It's about just straight up like the music. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure maybe Riverdance that year just produced the hell out of that album. Because the Rent Cast album is fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's maybe, honestly, they maybe did the same thing that I did when I first, like, went, you know, in high school when everyone was getting into Rent. I was like, two CDs? Did we need two CDs?
We did. We needed both CDs.
No. No.
Mom said the same thing. So she just bought the highlights, which was only one CD.
Yes. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that did that.
And then many years later, I saw the real one and I went, I'm sorry, there was more to this show. And that's when I started really getting into it. Riverdance, which I feel like now we all just like make fun of, but it must have been cool in the 90s.
Yeah, man.
Because it was composed by Bill Whalen and it originated as an interval performance act during the 1994 Eurovision Song Contest.
Really?
Yeah.
Riverdance is Eurovision?
Riverdance is Eurovision.
You know, a lot of things are Eurovision and that is something that we culturally, I think, need to get in on. Can we be part of Eurovision too? Because I feel like we're missing a large tentpole of American or just world culture in a way that I think is very frustrating.
Yeah. Because it brought us Riverdance and we don't understand it. And yet we gave it a Grammy Award.
All right.
Very ridiculous.
Life is weird.
Anyway, in 2001, Aida won the Grammy for Best Musical Theater Album. It beat Kiss Me, Kate. It beat The Music Man. It beat Swing. And it beat the Lacusa Wild Party.
Oh, here's my question. Before we get away from the musical Grammy.
Yeah.
And I guess to adhere to like what the actual segment is supposed to be. Hey, Grammys when the out like it's when the Grammys award a musical. Now you know.
it's the category. For some reason, The Simpsons have a weird grudge against the Grammys. That's the first I ever heard about them. I don't know why.
Who won the album? Was it Avenue Q or Wicked?
Wicked.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, I'm just making sure because I just looked that up.
Who won most?
2005, races? Wicked. It beat Assassins. It beat The Boy from Oz. That's the other cool thing about the Grammys is that it pits it against any musical theater album. So off-Broadway shows that record, are also in the mix. I went back down to the 60s, but I was going to tell you the most recent ones. Most recently, Jagged Little Pill won this year.
Really?
As an album.
As an album, sure.
Sure. They all sounded good. We said that.
Yeah, that's true.
Hadestown won last year.
Yeah.
Because absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the band's Visit won. Interesting.
I do wonder what the occurrence of like it won Best Musical and therefore it won the Grammy as well. Like, is it, I'm sure it kind of like foreshadows that one will win the other, but I wonder how much it actually is a successful strike rate.
Yeah, I wonder because the Tonys happened long before the Grammys. Like all of these that I'm seeing, like Dear Evan Hansen won the Grammy in 2018, but it won the Tony in 2017. I guess because the Grammys happen in the following spring or winter time. I don't really pay attention to the Grammys except for this. Notably, what I find interesting about the Wikipedia page of Grammy for Best Musical Theater, is that three shows have won multiple times.
Which are?
Okay.
Gypsy.
Okay.
Les Mis. And West Side Story.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Music Man threatened to, but it was defeated.
Well, we'll see. I mean, who knows? This new Music Man might put out an album.
Yeah. The Music Man has three nominations. Just the one win. Gypsy and West Side Story has four nominations. And then a lot of shows have two nominations.
Okay.
But I found that very interesting.
That is really interesting.
Yes.
The politics of awards is very interesting because at the end of the day, it's a fundamentally absurd concept to be like, this is the best thing that is subjective. And so watching things win certain ones but not others and watching people fight about it, even though I will get in on those fights, is so like you got to stop and go, why are we doing this?
Yeah. But I think that brings it back to the concept of being undeniably good is that like there is a lot of politics in these award shows until something is just like, no, this wins. Like there's always so much marketing you can do in order to like to gain favor to win an award. And if something is just like, nah, this is it.
Yeah.
Hamilton is its own marketing at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Shall we talk about the winner from
2001, you said.
2001? 2001. Messed up my own life. Oh, I was thinking of the other Elton John musical, The Lion King, which won in 1999. But today we're talking about Aida.
Aida.
Let's start with some personal histories. Jaybird.
I actually saw this for the first time at Surflight. I knew of Aida, but I saw it regionally at the theater that I was working at the time, and really kind of fell in love with this show just from you see a regional theater show and sometimes it goes one of two ways, you know, either it's just like, that was fun, but you know, I can see the like where this could have been better. But that show in particular, I was like, no, they had really talented folks and the show is just so strong. And it's also like really easily done on a lower budget.
A lot of stuff is implied visually anyway, because they can't build a real pyramid. So if you're just going to imply more, as long as you do it well, it'll still work.
Honestly, it comes down to costuming. If you get the costuming right, yes. That's it. I mean, that's
absolutely
the
ball game.
As long as you have the budget for Strongest Suit.
Yeah, that's the best song in the show, and I can totally admit that to myself that I'm just like, yeah, I just like that song. So I actually have a lot of affection for this show, but I haven't seen it. This is the first time I heard it like in a long time. I was like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, this is a good show.
Yeah, Alex.
This is one of those shows that I remember seeing the poster for in Times Square at the time. Like there's that chunk of ad space that's always there on like the corner of 46th on midway through one of the buildings. And I believe that's where I saw the Aida poster and it said Elton John. And I was a Lion King fan, of course, because I was a child and I still am, but I was also a child and into it. And I was like, oh, maybe that's a thing I should get into eventually. And then kind of forgot about it. And then we sort of talked about it a little bit in passing on here when Kimberly said she listened to the whole album on a car ride and sobbed at the end as you pulled into your destination. Sorry if I just accidentally ate your personal history.
No, it's fine. Apparently, I've told it already.
Please do again because I want details. But I remember that. And then I was dating somebody a couple years ago that Aida was one of the shows that she was into as a kid and like had stayed with her. And so I listened to like a little bit of it just because like, oh, I should be versed in her shows. And I listened to maybe the first three tracks, not because I didn't like it, just because I was, you know, doing other stuff. And I remember I went to go visit her parents and she picks me up at the bus station and goes, I have had a day. Can we please scream sing Aida all the way home? And I went, yes, we can. And we had a great moment just skrelting like Fortune Favors the Brave. And it was really nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, as Alex mentioned, I received this album on Christmas morning when I was 12, 13, 14. I'm not sure.
That's so sweet.
Because my mom always gave me a few cast albums of shows I didn't know or that she thought I would like.
Oh.
On Christmas. And so then.
That's actually really sweet. I like that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. And so on the drive the next day, we would always go to the Poconos with a bunch of friends. And so on the drive to the Poconos, I listened to Aida, and it was like the exact length of the drive. And I was not okay.
Yeah.
When I realized that they were going to die.
Yeah, it's really sad.
In their love.
They die pretty horribly, too. The show kind of
they like, suffocate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In a big concrete box.
Yeah. Yes. It's very, very upsetting.
Which is
and a I was like, what's happening?
I kind of when I was before I saw the bootleg of this show that I watched a couple weeks ago and I just read they suffocate in a tomb, I did kind of that Bright Star Baby math. I'm like, okay, how big is the tomb? If it's big enough that they could still breathe and they would have starved to death, but if it's small enough that they would have run out of air, at least I think that'd probably be better than the slug. And I was like, I don't like that I'm doing this math.
No. In my mind, I'm just like, they fall asleep in each other's arms and then they're gone.
So if you're listening to this thinking about maybe getting into Aida, spoiler alert, it does not have a happy ending.
No. Oh, it kind of does, but kinda. It's in an epilogue way. But you were saying, Jay, I cut you off.
Oh, I was just saying it's like horrible way to die, but from a set piece perspective, that big concrete box is pretty excellent.
Yeah, and then like, it's one of the first things you see in that Egypt exhibit, and it's like explained you, that's what that, it's really cool.
And it really, I think really as I've been thinking about Aida, I think that whole start of them being in the museum, I think is kind of a linchpin to the entirety of the vibe of this show, in that this show should not be as evocative and emotional as it is, considering all of the mechanics are a little hokey. In that, like, starting in a museum, I was like, all right, we're just like just totally ad hoc swapping this from Phantom of the Opera. This is
a little bit
like Aida exists in that weird little, it's almost hack.
Yes.
Almost hack.
Fully agree.
But it is so earnest that it doesn't go too far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I guess it's also a sign of the times, like the early 2000s. It's very like
turn of the century.
But the ending when they like show up and it's like clearly them again, I was just like, I'm like, this is beautiful. Uh-huh. But also, this is so stupid. You know what I mean? It's like that weird feeling where it's just like, I should hate this, but I really don't.
I like to imagine, like, did they know each other? Did they know who each other were? Or do they just have a feeling? Did they casually date for a minute? Like, what did the rest of that look like?
Yeah, I don't think that, I don't want to see the rest of that scene. I don't think it holds water. I think it's like it's a graduate situation. They sit down in the back of the bus and go, what did we just do?
Thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah.
Searching and searching for you. Aida. Yeah. I was just going to run you through some facts.
Sounds great.
It premiered on Broadway at the Palace on March 23rd, 2000. And it closed September 5th, 2004.
That is an excellent run.
Yeah, 30 previews, 1,852 performances. And so it is the 39th longest running show in Broadway history. excuse me. It recouped its investment after 99 weeks and generated a profit of $12 million, which is just showing you that theater is not a great investment.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that show ran for a very long time. And like, it made like what would be a very horrible box office weekend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
it made the profit of a terrible film.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Sometimes you see like box office take and you're just like, this is the thesis statement as to why movies were invented. This is like, oh yeah, we can make this for a lot cheaper and sell a lot more tickets.
Yeah. Heather Headley, the original Aida, she won a Tony and a Drama Desk.
Yeah.
She was also the original Nala in The Lion King.
Yeah, man.
Who I always said that I saw because I thought I saw the original cast. And then I looked back No, I didn't. I was eight, so I didn't know the difference.
Heather Headley as Aida and Adam Pascal as Adam Pascal.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my God. That's why I got the album, I think, is because it was like in my Rent phase. My mom was like, that guy from Rent, Aida.
Yeah.
And he's great, but he's Adam Pascal again.
Yeah. Like, whales.
He was Kinky Boots.
He's on tour with Pretty Woman.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Back in the game.
Yeah, I could have seen Heather Headley and Lion King, but we were living in Minneapolis and it did its out-of-town tryout in Minneapolis for the Lion King. And my mom had the opportunity to buy tickets but didn't buy them. She was like, the Lion King? Why are they doing that? That's stupid. Like, that's probably going to be dumb. And then it's the highest grossing musical of all time. it's literally like...
Smart Cats.
My mom's like, I'm sorry. I boned it on that one.
You've said this story before, and every time I go, I'm pretty sure it was at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle.
No, it was definitely at...
No, you're right. Okay. Minneapolis at the Orpheum.
Yeah, it was at the Orpheum. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
I look forward to your written apology.
No, you deserve the written apology from Ann Schmidt. Yeah. Let's just go through the world of replacement casts.
Oh, okay.
For Aida.
Yeah.
Because there were many, because it ran for 4 years. It was a Disney theatrical production. Yeah. And so
I was wasn't it also like a disaster in previews for a minute? I watched a video about it.
I don't know if it was a disaster in previews or there was like they tried it once and it didn't go well, and so they rewrote it.
It had some struggle, and then it was panned, right? It kind of had the Wicked effect where it's like the critics hated it, but then it exploded because it's actually good.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
But I think the critics hated it for the reasons we were talking about earlier. It's just like, is this bad? Is it bad? Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
We'll get into it. I think it has a couple of glaring story flaws, but I also don't care.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was called Elaborate Lives, The Legend of Aida. It had its world premiere at the Alliance in Atlanta.
Just call it Aida.
Just call it Aida.
Well, they did.
I know. Guys. I know.
Spoiler. They corrected the flaw. So yes, driven by hydraulics, the pyramid sides and the bottom could be turned around and rotated to suggest various locations. But the piece that was $10 million to make frequently broke.
Oh,
and a new production designer was hired for the restaging in Chicago. Huh. So maybe that's what it was. During the Chicago run. Oh, more set mishaps.
But it
injured both of them. While the two actors were being conveyed in a suspended box-like tomb at the climax of the show, the set piece fell from its support 8 feet above the stage.
Aida, turn off the dark.
A subsequent press release from the show's publicist stated that Headley and Pascal sustained minor injuries and were taken to the hospital. Both were released a few hours later. From then on, the tomb remained on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because of course it does. Oh, Wayne Cilento was the choreographer for Aida.
Oh, wow.
Who then went on to do Wicked.
Yeah.
And he was an original cast member in Tommy.
And in...
And in Chorus Line.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's very nice. Anyway, pop stars that took over the role of Aida.
Oh, okay. Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Is there a show that is more built for that than this? And it's like a feature, not a bug.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Deborah Cox.
Oh, okay.
Toni Braxton. After she was Belle.
Yeah, man.
Michelle Williams from Destiny's Child.
Oh.
I think that's who was like, because I think it was still running. Maybe it had already closed by the time I had the cast album. Or maybe, no, I think it was still running and Michelle Williams was in it and I wanted to go, but I never saw it. I've never seen Aida live.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maya Davis, Sekhon Sengbulo, Simone, Merle Dandridge. Notable replacements for Radames include Will Chase.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Cassidy.
Richard I know H. none Blake. Of these names so far.
Oh. Will Chase, what would you say Will Chase's biggest thing besides Smash?
She was in Smash. He was he played Rob in the High Fidelity musical flop. Okay.
He was the Roger in the filmed final cast of Rent.
Oh.
So makes sense he'd also be in Aida.
Yeah.
And then Idina Menzel took over for Sherri Renee Scott. And there are some bootlegs of her doing My Strongest Suit that I've watched.
Oh.
And I think Sherri Renee Scott took over as Maureen. So they kind of swapped. I don't know. I'm obviously not at the same time.
Oh, but I don't know the timeline. But yeah, I think they did both. Mandy Gonzalez also was Amneris for a time.
Okay.
Who we know from In the Heights and Hamilton now.
She was my Angelica.
And Lisa Brescia from Ordinary Days, who I love.
This is a show I would see, like, stunt casting again. Yeah, I think Alex nailed it. It's like, this is a show that I perfectly acceptable to go see a stunt cast.
Yeah, if this show had the amount of stunt casting that Chicago does, it would be a plus, like I said.
Absolutely. I mean, Kinky Boots. We keep bringing it up, but again, but I think Kinky Boots, for me mentally, it fell into that same category. I was like, do I hate this? I kind of like this. Like, I was like, is this bad? I don't care.
I think what we also just hit on is the more poppy the show is, the more it's like, yeah, cast a pop star. It sounds simple when you say it, but like,
yeah,
Kinky Boots is written by Cyndi Lauper. Like, why not?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time where it was rumored that Beyonce was going to star in this movie.
Really?
In 2007. And then it just kind of went away.
What a shame.
It was going to be her and Christina Aguilera.
Oh.
It's Rodimace.
That is like peak 2007. Woof.
Yeah.
That is.
Yeah, probably would have been Justin Timberlake as Rodimace. I don't know.
I mean.
He's Social Network.
I mean, you know.
Listen, we'd watch it.
I'd watch it. I'd watch that. Yeah. I don't know. Christina Aguilera is a little, I don't know. I saw Burlesque. That was not it. She was, Cher couldn't even save that movie. But.
One of the sad casualties of the pandemic was the planned revival of Aida that was set to come to Broadway.
Yeah.
It was going to premiere at Paper Mill and then move to Broadway in the fall. And obviously.
Do we think that's dead now or?
I think so, although there's a production that apparently is going to open in Germany that is now that same production that wants to move.
I have to be like, even as I was listening through it, I was like, I look at the camera and I go, I want to see this again. I was like, there's no reason this show shouldn't have been revived already.
No, it is such like a, you're right, like an early 2000s musical. And like Alex was saying that he remembers seeing the poster. Like, it's so true. Like, if you think of, like, high school, you going to Times Square and seeing stuff, like, Aida's everywhere.
And the funny...
Because it's in the palace. It's in Times Square.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this, though. It's a bad poster. I don't like it. I don't know what I would put in instead. I don't like the poster. It's a little too, like, Andrew Lloyd Webber-y for me. I don't know.
Well, I'll be excited to see the new poster.
Me too. I think they have, there's a lot of opportunities, you know.
Yeah, and maybe they'll change the name back to Elaborate Lives.
The Legend of Aida. Elaborate. Oh, these lives are so elaborate.
Yeah.
I think they
hinge a lot of story stuff on that lyric, and it doesn't quite work.
No, yeah. It really doesn't.
Such elaborate lives.
We're also that's not again.
I loved that song.
The lyric doesn't work.
But is it bad? Like,
we'll get into my gripes about Aida. On the whole, I really love it, but I've got things.
They just sing the shit out of it, so yeah. You don't care.
Yeah, but also
it's a rock concert.
We were talking about this earlier. I feel like we
Fortune Favors the Brave. Hell yeah,
we missed a multiverse
with that vocal fry.
We miss a multiverse of there being of like of John and Rice just continuing to write classic operas as like new pop shows.
Yeah.
In a way that like, I was like, oh man, yeah, this, I was like, this story is really good. I was like, oh yeah, because it's a famous opera. And I was like, there's probably so much more to mine and other stuff that could have worked. And they just kind of, It's interesting to me that ball didn't keep rolling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially when people smell money. Like, it'd be like, hey, we wrote like the next Aida. And they're like, okay, sure. But then they're like, we only made 12 million on Aida.
So they ran for 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, we smell money in the other room. We're like, is that money?
Beyonce, want to do the movie?
Yeah. The fact that this more than any other thing we've done in a while, I'm just viscerally feeling, why don't we have a movie? It just feels too right, you know? Like,
why don't we have a movie?
Yeah. Especially
because you could stunt cast it. You could stunt cast the shit out of it.
Because, I mean, and also this show benefits from just being attached to Elton John.
Yeah.
Like, just the name recognition alone could sell a movie.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there was even like an Elton John duets album of just the songs that also was successful. I didn't listen to it, but I think it exists.
Yeah. I guess I'm kind of bummed really at the end of the day that Elton John, like, he's been writing things here and there for like the stage, but like we haven't really, he started doing movie stuff and there's just so much more money there. So I can't blame him, but like, okay. We could use another Elton John musical right now, right?
He's good at it. Oh,
absolutely.
He's just so good at it. And it's just frustrating that it just doesn't.
I'd settle for another Elton John Disney movie. Like, just do another Lion King. I'd be happy. I would love another show, but I'll settle for a movie.
I would go see Rocket Man the musical in a heartbeat.
Apparently that movie was very good, so.
Oh my gosh.
Who would you cast as Elton?
I don't know. Myself. I'll do it. I'll do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can see you in the glasses. Yeah. You look so cute. I'm picturing it now.
Side note, the last I heard of Elton John was today when I saw him in that Uber Eats commercial, and it was a weird dissonance from what we're doing today.
Yeah. Elton John contains multitudes, you know?
He does.
There's so many different flavors there. It's like hard to like, yeah, it's like a sundae with every flavor in it. You just like stick your spoon in, you're like, which Elton John am I getting this time? I'm getting the one from Kingsman. That's a weird taste.
He's in
the second one, yeah. As himself.
With the guy. And isn't the lead of that movie the one who plays him in the
movie? Where they met. And that's where they were like, oh, you kind of, yeah.
Fascinating.
Uh-huh.
I do also want to call attention to David Henry Wang, wrote the book.
Oh yeah.
And he is just an insane playwright. And I thought that was very cool. This was his first musical theater.
Really?
Yeah. So he did M. Butterfly, all that. He's very, very the hit of the 90s, this man. And then he did the book for Aida. Then he did he retooled the book for Flower Drum Song. Actually, maybe he did that first.
No, I think he did. Yeah.
So he retooled the book of Flower Drum Song for the revival in the 90s.
And actually made Flower Drum Song like good and not totally racist and
correct,
like, actually a viable show.
Yeah, they really needed him. And then he did the book for Tarzan.
Oh yeah.
And then most recently he did Soft Power, which I think is still Broadway aimed, but it was downtown. I think it was at the Public.
I don't know that show.
Soft Power. I think there's actually, I'm not sure if there's an album. I'm just like clicking on it because I didn't see it, so I don't quite know.
Soft Power could also be the name of the Elton John musical.
Soft Power.
Yeah, the Elton John story. Soft Power.
It's Janine Tesori.
Oh.
Yeah. It's the reverse King and I. Instead of an exoticizing an Asian country, Soft Power exoticizes America by looking at it from a hypothetical future Chinese musical.
Oh, cool.
You're like watching this like Chinese musical about America.
Interesting.
In the future.
I feel like that could be amazing, or if it's in the wrong hands, like, this is wildly racist.
Well, with those
everyone
two,
I know loves
those
it.
Two, sure.
Yeah.
So I hope it still
I heard rumblings of that.
Yeah, it was nominated for 11 drama desks in 2020.
Wow.
Also, I've never heard about a musical set in a future where it is a musical. Like, that's alone, I'm kind of interested.
Yeah, it seems very meta. And I don't know.
It's
I
like
don't know five, a lot
it's like steampunk Jurassic Chaperone.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about it because there's like stuff you have to see. And my friends kept saying it was hard to explain. And then once you saw it, everyone was like, what did you think of the end? And so...
Yeah,
it seems like something you have to see. So when it comes back, if it comes back, I would like to go see it because I will see anything Janine Tesori does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Aida, it's nice to see a show that like is so, the story is just so tight and there's really not a lot of filler in this thing. Yeah. Like every scene, like, you know, Could this show use a little bit, little Master of the House energy? Kinda. But at the same time, it's like you like the three main characters, like you kind of all understand all of them. You may not like all of them, mm-hmm. but like it's nice to see this show has like such potential. If you get the right people to play all these parts, this show can, you can knock this show out of the park.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think what, like what you're saying about, you might not like all of them, but they're all human. They do a really good job, I think, at painting Amneris as an antagonist, not a villain, because mm-hmm. She arguably makes the definitive heroic choice at the end to let them die together, which is fucked up to think about.
Yeah.
But like, she has her own hero's journey while this is going on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Amneris is a character in like other hands is just like a one note kind of punchline.
Yeah.
And in this show, it was like, oh, like, I don't agree with all of her choices, but I get it. You know, yeah. Like.
Yeah.
And also she's the best song on the show. So, you know, she's just awesome.
Yeah. Shall we little loves?
Yeah. Can we do some little gripes first?
Absolutely.
Okay.
All right.
I love Aida. I really do. I think that Tim Rice is a very hit and miss lyricist. And I think when he is missing, one of his problems is that it sounds like the song could be in any show and it isn't specific enough to make sense for the situation. Like Elaborate Lives, you have to squint at it to understand. I mean, you can understand what it means, but like for that to be the song they sing while they're dying, you're like, I guess that makes enough sense. Like, this is all Sound and Fury signifying nothing. And yeah. Easy as a Life, what does that mean? I heard it wrong as Easy as a Lie, which makes way more sense. Like, I can just pretend I don't like them. But it just, and what sucks is that I love this, the story on paper is really great and the songs are great. And like I said, even the fact that it is tonally defiantly out of step with its own material sometimes, like, you can't kill, make me marry that woman. I'm in love with this other woman. I don't care. Oh, you're going to be Pharaoh so I can be Shadow Pharaoh. Like father, like son. It doesn't work. But also it's kind of fun that it doesn't entirely work because it's such a good song. It's like, yeah, this is a balls out pop song in a moment where we don't need one of those. We're doing it anyway. And I can go with that. It's part of the fun.
Yeah. Again, it's like, do I hate this show? Yeah. But I can't hate it. I'm liking it so much, but do I hate it?
Yeah. And like the central flaw for me, and this is not the Aida problem, it's musicals from this era problem, is he loves her because she's a badass. She loves him because the story needs to move.
Okay.
I mean, they justify it that he's the different one, but he hasn't really shown enough for me. It felt like she falls in love with him and then they do some characterization after the fact.
I'll give you that.
I was like, I'm not buying this. I really want to. I'll go with it. Like, Waitress has the same problem. They fall in love because the story has to move. And then once they do, everything is really cool and sweet and specific. But until then, I'm just like, okay, we're doing this now.
But I think in Waitress, like, using the Waitress example, I think that just shows it's like sometimes people just fall in love. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not... You know,
sometimes people just fall in love.
Oh, shut up. I think that's also an issue with updating an opera.
Yes, exactly.
But again, I think you know, you have talented enough people around that they probably could have figured that out a little bit more.
Yeah. And I think they get pretty close. It's just it doesn't quite work, and that's like I said, it doesn't not work enough to make the show not work for me. But by the end, I'm like, okay, I guess this, I mean, it wants, it's at the same time a very epic feeling love story and a very like afterthought, like, well, we have to do this because this is what the show is about kind of feeling. Like the songwriting, I think, is the strongest part of Aida, and then the cast, and then the story writing is strong enough that shows off the other two.
Yeah.
And so
it keeps the boat afloat. I wouldn't say it's necessarily driving anything, but it doesn't sink it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, like I said, I'm not mad about it enough to not like the show, but I am by the end going, huh? Oh, okay. And then of course, by the end, when they find each other again, I'm sobbing again. So like, I'm not that pissed off about it, but like, you know, just, I don't get why some of those, like some of these songs are perfect. All the music throughout is great. And a lot of the song, the lyrics are very evocative. And then some of the lyrics are just like, was this one of your trunk songs that you just said, this goes here? Because this doesn't drive home the point enough for me. You have to squint at it to make it.
I think that's also like a sign of the times. I feel like a lot of musicals in the early 2000s kind of had that vibe a little bit, especially when it was like, you know, it's the emergence of like jukebox shows and, you know, Elton John, while he.
And just more like pop sensibilities where it's not so literal in the lyric.
Yeah. And I think it probably isn't for the better, but I also get that you have to put it in its time.
Yeah.
Yes. So. And listen, if one thing's coming back, it is early 2000s fashion. So let's get Aida.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I think my only little gripe is that like, it's, I just, sometimes I'm just like, sometimes I'm liking it so much I forget that I hate it.
Yeah,
which is such a weird, I know that's the weirdest thing to say, but it's really, I think it encapsulates this whole show for me.
It's a great show that leaves a bad taste in your mouth every couple days.
Yes,
you're like, was that bad? Yeah, but also
And yet it's so fun to listen
it's
to.
Such a good show. Like, that's the thing, it's like, it's like my favorite show that I also kind of hate.
But the album is so good. Like, when I listened to that album, I think it was, that was the CD in my portable CD player.
Oh yeah, man.
For a month.
With the skip protection.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. 10 second skip protection. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's the good stuff.
But truly, I think like for a month, like I could sing you this entire score front to back, and I haven't listened through it until like yesterday in years.
Yeah.
And but it is like up. Brent, it is in me.
It all holds up, and it's all like, I will also forgive a lot about a show if I really like the album, because usually I get to the album first. But I also saw a bootleg of this and I was like, this has a lot of story problems, but also don't care.
Yeah. I looked at Kimberly and I was like, so you're good for Aida, right? And she just like scoffed at me. She's like, I'm fine. I was like, oh, okay, whoa.
Yeah, I can talk about Aida. Oh my god, I have little loves.
Hit me.
I just love every story as a love story. I like the tone of the opening of the show into it. I like it into Fortune Favors the Brave, which I realized today because accidentally I was watching it, listening on shuffle. And so at the end of every story is a love story, when it's about, and it goes to that like, and then it starts Fortune Favors the Brave.
Yeah.
It like skipped to How I Know You or something because it was on shuffle. And I just went,
It's a hard left turn.
And so it's one of those albums where you know exactly how the next track starts as soon as it's over. Also, just Heather Headley's vowels are my favorite in all that she does. So for instance, Alex, you said Easy as a Life. The song is called Easy as Life.
Wait.
But she adds an so that she can flip that note up. Easy as life is just so she can get to the note.
Oh yeah, wow.
But there's no in that sentence, which I think is why it's confusing.
Yeah.
But just like the way she says Nubia.
Yeah.
The gods love Nubia. Also, her voice is so cool.
Yeah. I didn't even think about it. That is really cool.
Yeah.
Also, speaking of multiverses, in the opera, it's Ethiopia, and that would not have worked lyrically.
Yeah, no.
The gods love Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Mouthful.
And every time she speaks in the songs is also my favorite.
She picks her speak moments good.
Yeah.
Marry the princess, by the mace.
There are no shackles on you. Like, every time she talks.
Yeah.
She's so good.
My little love is just Heather Headley.
My little love is I just really like Amneris is my favorite character, and I'm not, and I apologize for nothing. It's just nice to see something that could have obviously fallen into like the dumb blonde tropes, and like the she's so much more complicated than that, and I really appreciate growth. Yes. Like, they do a really nice job with her character, and
The Truth is a great song.
Yes, but also she also has my favorite lyric, and I sing this all the time, and Kimberly can attest to that. My favorite lyric in the whole show, because it's just, I just think it's just really, it's a really fun phrase, and it rhymes with everything else in it, but it also uses words that you wouldn't anticipate being in like a rhyme song, like a pop song kind of. Just the phrase, "I would rather wear a barrel than conservative apparel."
Thank you.
It mixes both like lowbrow, highbrow. It's just meh, that whole song. Again, that song should be just a bit to show off dresses. You know what I mean? And that could be enough. But I just think it just has that je ne sais quoi of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if they do a revival of this. Like, I think we can lose the slave fashion show. That's a bit tone deaf today.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
But also.
And so then it just becomes a quick change number.
Yeah.
Where she just keeps changing dresses.
Mm-hmm. I'd be fine with that.
I also like the idea of her showing off all of the fashions of places that they have conquered.
So
she's just like kind of absorbed their, like, it's like a commentary on appropriation.
Yeah.
Ooh.
That would be really good.
Yeah.
I like that.
I'm telling you, we need an AIDA revival. I gotta see that in a heartbeat.
All right, let's go to Germany.
Yeah.
In 2022.
But also, like, okay, my other little love.
Yeah.
I am a weird person, and I think I take away the wrong thing sometimes. Look, that big concrete box, very scary. No one wants to get buried alive in a concrete box. But also, the way that it's designed for that stage production, it seems like it would have a very excellent, like, kind of chilly modular temperature in there, in that it would be, like, I think very pleasing to be inside from, like, a temperature perspective. In that, you know how, like, sometimes you go, like, you know, when it's, like
in a cave?
Like, yeah, when it's, like, really hot out, but, like, you go down into your basement and it's kind of chilly, and, like, you sit on, like, the concrete floor and it's, like, ooh, this feels nice. I feel like that. Like, refreshing in its own way, you know, before you suffocate to death.
Like, you just touch the side and you're like, oh, that's nice. I forgot.
Yeah.
I was so busy being coolly refreshed that I forgot we're going to die in 45 minutes.
Yeah, and I think that kind of actually plays to, so it's not that much of a tragedy, because everyone's like, oh, that's terrible, but also like, oh, it's cool, a cool box.
Also, like, I just had a kind of moment, like, it also looks like if you wrapped the side with your knuckles, it would have a pleasing metallic sound, like,
absolutely. Gong, gong. Bong, bong. Like, yeah.
Yeah, like a gong.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, absolutely.
That's weird. My little love. We're fucking weird, Jay.
Very strange. Alex, what are your little loves?
You took my first one about the fortune favors the brave, but I'm okay with that because it's so good it should get two. I love Another Pyramid. It's one of my favorite new villain songs. Mm-hmm. It sets up that guy perfectly. I've actually heard a lot of people kind of argue over, like, what is his better song, Another Pyramid or Like Father Like Son. I think it's not even close. It's Another Pyramid. And I like Father Like Son.
It's an annoying song.
Yeah, like it's fine, but it is the song where, at like I said before, where I am most conscious of, like, this is weird. This tone does not match this moment. Like,
oh yeah.
Another Pyramid, it's really cool. It's also kind of like you were saying, this show needs some Master of the House energy. I know what you mean, but also this is kind of that show's Master of the House, is the villain being, it's, I'm not saying you're wrong. You're absolutely right. Cause you mean in terms of a sonic quality, but I'm like, oh, this is that kind of like, I'm the gross guy song, but he's also the bigger bad than Tenor.
Yeah. It's more, I feel like because it's so like all the storylines are so tight with all the characters, I feel like you need, like, there needs to be that like side character.
A jester of some kind.
Yeah. The show needs a jester. It needs like someone like to come out and sing a silly song and like be funny every once in a while, but like really not have any effect on anything.
Yeah, I mean, they kind of have Marab, but he cracks some jokes and then sings very sad songs. So it's a weird kind of fulfillment of that role.
Yeah.
I love Dance of the Robe mainly for all the times they say Aida, because it's cool in that major key where it's Aida, Aida. But then when shit gets real, it becomes minor, like Aida, 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 and really tense, and it's really good. I heard that song and I instantly thought, like, can I give the female character in my show a moment like that? Because the movie doesn't give her anything cool to do. And I kind of wanted to, we're Miles and I are trying to write her a lot better, and we have, but also, you know, what other ways could we?
But
could
also, we it's the Patriot, dude. Do you need to, like, people are showing up for, you know,
for Mel Gibson stuff.
Yeah, I just want to. I want to see him throw a hatchet.
Oh, he is. He is. Don't get me wrong.
But, is there like an actor doing like the bullet, but it's like the hatchet? Like...
We don't know yet how we're gonna handle the hatchet because we're also very conscious of. You're doing a lot of hatchet spinning choreography right now, and it's simultaneously irritating and awesome. We've been kind of conscious of like, okay, this moment works because of film editing, wouldn't work on stage. So we're kind of like being judicious about some of that stuff. But if there can be a moment where an actor throws a hatchet, even if we have to like black out the lights for a second and there's just an actor holding it to his head, I'll be here for it. And my final one is I love A Step Too Far. It's just kind of like everybody's moody for different reasons. And there's that pyramid of like LED lights and it's just really cool. And just
because the $10 million pyramid would crash to the ground if you tried to spin it.
Yep.
Like LEDs, just throw them up there.
Yeah, the pyramid that cost almost as much as the profit takeaway was not a good investment.
Yeah, no.
Well, here's the thing.
Yeah,
we were talking about like, oh, the show only made $12 million. Do you think if they didn't build that pyramid, the show would have made $22 million? Because they were like, well, it only made $12 million because we spent $10 million on a stage pyramid.
Oof. Yeah.
That blows my mind. Because Wicked was what, $14 million, I think we established? It's like
something like
most
that.
Of the budget of Wicked was one thing in this show and it didn't work or look good. Or
yeah, it's very sad.
Yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah.
So those are all my loves. I love this show.
What does Harold do to this show?
We're putting him in that box.
I think it's so...
Now, do we commit an act of mercy and let him have his phone in there?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You can have your phone, but you're going in.
You're going in the box, Harold.
Just you and your phone. Your true love.
And again, when the phone rings, that's going to have a nice sounding reverb to it.
Yeah, it's a good box.
Oh my goodness.
If you're going to make a murder box, at least make one that's got a lot of cool extra features.
Craftsmanship.
Oh God, Alex, is there a review?
There's a review. This is from Drive With Us Podcast. 5 stars. Please leave Broadway Baby 5 stars and a nice review. Really helps our numbers and we can grow the show. This the subject is entertaining with an exclamation point. The chemistry between the three just makes the show more enjoyable to listen to. I never would have considered myself a theater fan, but now this show has definitely made me more interested in this niche. Great listen.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I'm glad there was an exclamation point and not a question mark.
Mm-hmm.
Entertaining?
Entertaining? Well, I mean, if Aida proved us anything, it's like things, you can have the question mark and still make $12 million. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Good.
You gotta have Elton John to push that question mark over into an exclamation point.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. All right, it's time. Sing out, Louise.
I once had the conviction that musicals were bad. A picture of unhappiness compounded by a load of stress. Defense is ironclad. And while I judged the fangirls, I longed for what they shared. My silence was a somber song. Now I'm back and I am done pretending I don't care. I can't believe he's changing. And who'd have thought that arrogance could die? And not me, not me. That singing from a stage could make me cry. Not me, not me. And who'd have guessed that this morality play would end with me found when I'd gone astray? Not me, not me.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I liked it.